morning. This is the KBOO Morning News for Friday, February 24th, 2006. I'm Chris Andre.
And Jim Thompson.
Coming up on the KBOO Morning News, PacifiCorp seeks a $112 million rate increase. A federal judge ordered the Pentagon to release the identities of detainees at Guantanamo Bay. And five Palestinians were shot dead in an Israeli incursion. Today's Portland area weather, partly sunny, patchy fog in the morning, highs around 45 tonight, partly cloudy, lows 25 to 30.
Portland's South Waterfront Development's civic amenities could cost $50 million more than the city developers or Oregon Health and Science University have committed to spend, this according to the Oregonian. The combined cost of planned traffic improvements, parks, and affordable housing looks set to pass the $100 million mark. The city developers and OHSU have agreed to chip in money to cover only about half of the cost, and the estimate understates the full cost of realizing the city's goal for a livable high-rise neighborhood. The funding shortfall for the city's most ambitious economic development project includes a recent $15 million cost overrun for an aerial tram to conduct OHSU's South Waterfront expansion to its main campus on Markham Hill. The development's various players have never determined exactly how many public amenities to build, how much they would cost, or exactly how the cost would be covered. But 2 years into the project, as the development and its cost have come into clearer view and the public amenities have yet to take shape, some stakeholders and observers have grown anxious about progress and funding toward the full vision. This from the Oregonian.
The Portland City Council this week gave the final okay to the city's biggest construction project ever, the $381 million east side segment of the Big Pipe. Council members voted 5-0 to grant the east side contract to the construction partnership of Kiewit Bilfinger Berger. They also agreed to create an independent review committee of city employees and citizen stakeholders to monitor construction. The city is spending $1.4 billion to build a system of pipelines and stormwater diversion steps to stop overflowing of untreated sewage and stormwater into the Willamette River and the Columbia River slough. The first half of the project, running along and under the west side of the river, is almost finished and has come in on time and under budget. But back when they began the work, city leaders split construction into two phases. The reasoning was that if tunneling under the west side of the Willamette River didn't go well, they could find a new contractor for the eastern half. Last year, an 8-person evaluation committee voted to grant the east side contract to the Kiewit Partnership rather than to the partnership of Imprigil Ohelio Bayashi, which included contracting firms responsible for the west side. This from the Oregonian.
PacifiCorp filed a general rate case with the Oregon Public Utilities Commission yesterday, seeking an overall increase in rates of $112 million to take effect in December 2006. The Portland-based utility serves 535,000 electricity customers in the state. Requested rate increases vary by customer class. Yesterday's rate request included a 10.8% hike in rates for residential customers and a 19.8% increase for large industrial customers. The company said big drivers of the increase are the increased prices of natural gas, investments in generation, transmission, and distribution, infrastructure, and general operating expenses, including the maintenance of low-cost but aging power plants. A general rate case will take all the company's costs into account. The PUC's procedure is to immediately suspend the application in order to investigate the request, which can take from 6 to 9 months. The company has requested 5 general rate increases in the last 10 years. You do the math. This according to the Oregonian.
People are feeling the pinch from rising inflation. The most closely watched inflation barometer, the Consumer Price Index, advanced by 0.7% compared with a 0.1% dip in December. The seesaw pattern mostly reflects shifting energy prices. With inflation gaining momentum in January, families' budgets were strained. A separate report also released by the Labor Department showed that workers' average weekly earnings adjusted for inflation dropped by 0.4% in January compared with a year ago. For most workers last year, paychecks didn't keep pace with inflation. While the Bush administration has talked often about the generally good shape of the economy, Democrats have expressed worries about low- and middle-income families struggling under the weight of rising prices and living paycheck to paycheck. This from the Oregonian.
The Ninth U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals this week upheld Oregon's ban on paying ballot initiative signature gatherers by the number of signatures they obtain. The appeals court ruled that the restriction did not impose a severe burden on the First Amendment rights of ballot initiative chief petitioners. A three-judge panel of the appeals court said the state had an important regulatory interest in preventing fraud in the initiative process. The panel found that those who challenged the pay-by-the-signature ban had failed to prove that it would reduce the pool of petition circulators in Oregon, increase the cost of signature gathering, or lead to higher rates of invalid signatures on petitions. The unanimous ruling upheld Measure 26, the 2002 ballot initiative that imposed the ban, and was approved by voters by a 3-to-1 ratio. Since Measure 26 was adopted, professional signature-gathering companies have had to pay their employees by the hour or by some other method that is not based on the number of signatures obtained.
Clackamas County Sheriff's Deputy sees 17 starving horses yesterday from an isolated manure-covered pasture 6 miles south of Mallala. Deputies executing a search warrant described appalling living conditions for more than 50 Arabian, miniature, Tennessee Walker, and mixed breed horses. Some were so malnourished that ribs were protruding and patches of hair were falling out in clumps. With little food but a few sprigs of grass, some of the horses were hundreds of pounds underweight and had resorted to eating a wooden fence. One horse was dead. With more seizures possible, the rescue will become a major project, but is far from the worst case Oregon authorities have seen. Deputies and more than a dozen volunteers spent hours photographing the animals and their living conditions and escorting the sickest horses to trailers lined up to whisk them to veterinarians or foster homes throughout the region. Wednesday's seizure is the second in a week from the South Appleman Road farm of Virginia Ann Winter. This from the Oregonian.
Oregon's low-wage workers are already struggling to make ends meet, but a new report shows Oregon has some of the highest income taxes in the nation for low-income working families. KBOO's Jessica Perry has more.
As Oregonians start preparing their taxes, low-income families are getting hit hard. A new report shows Oregon has among the highest income taxes in the nation on poor and low-income working families. Oregon is one of a minority of states with income taxes that tax families living below the poverty line. Michael Leachman with the Oregon Center for Public Policy, which co-released the report, says Oregon's poor pay a larger share of their income in taxes than other taxpayers.
Oregon should not be making it harder for low-wage working families to put food on the table and keep a roof over their heads.
Leachman says the easiest way to help lower taxes for low-income working families is to expand the state earned income tax credit. He says the legislature did enact a slight increase last session, but it was only a small improvement. Leachman also says that voters approved cost of living increases in the minimum wage to help low-income families.
Oregon voters have made it clear that they want families working in minimum wage jobs to be able to meet their basic needs. The income taxes that Oregon requires these families to pay undermines the voters' will.
Content was provided by the Oregon News Service. I'm Jessica Perry, KBOO News.
A developer that builds homes for the homeless will be putting up two new projects in San Francisco thanks to $16 million in grants from the government. Community Housing Partnership, one of the city's largest developers of residences for the homeless, will use the money to build 167 units over the next 2 years. One housing project will be an 83-unit building on 600 block of Eddy Street. The other will be an 84-unit complex on the 600 block of Ellis. Most of the money is coming from the California Department of Housing and Community Development. The rest is federal and city money.
Vice President Dick Cheney faced fresh questions yesterday about the shooting of his hunting companion on a Texas ranch. Conflicting witness statements were released about whether alcohol had been consumed. The statements released by the local sheriff's office broadly confirm the circumstances under which Cheney sprayed Texas lawyer Harry Whittington with birdshot, wounding him in the face, chest, and torso. But statements from Cheney's host and other companions gave conflicting accounts about whether alcohol had been consumed amid accusations that the hunters had broken Texas laws on drinking and hunting. The ranch owner, Catherine Armstrong, said, quote, "To the best of my knowledge, there was no alcohol involved." Pamela Williford, the U.S. ambassador to Switzerland, who was directly beside Cheney when Mr. Whittington was shot, said she had a glass of wine at lunch, but no alcohol was consumed in the field. Cheney said he had had a beer at lunch. Mr. Whittington has yet to file his account. No other controlled substances other than alcohol have been considered in the inquiry, this according to The Guardian.
Two-thirds of Americans believe Hillary Rodham Clinton will run for president, but only one-third believe she can win, according to a national poll released yesterday. Almost 80% said they don't think Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice, a Republican, could win in the White House either. 27% of the voters said they're not likely to vote for a woman candidate in 2008, no matter which party ticket she headed. Clinton has not said if she'll run for president. Rice has said she has no interest in running. As with other national polls, Clinton led the list of potential contenders for the Democratic presidential nomination. The poll had McCain beating Clinton 52% to 42%, while the former First Lady and Giuliani were running about even.
FBI agents repeatedly warned military interrogators at the U.S. prison camp at Guantanamo Bay that their aggressive methods were legally risky and also likely to be ineffective. A senior officer at the prison for terror suspects also blatantly misled his superiors at the Pentagon into thinking the FBI had endorsed the, quote, aggressive and controversial interrogation plan. This according to one of the 54 memos released by the American Civil Liberties Union. The memos had been previously released, but in more heavily censored form, as part of an ACLU lawsuit under the Federal Freedom of Information Act. FBI officials, whose names were blacked out, indicate that senior military officials, including former Deputy Defense Secretary Paul Wolfowitz, were aware of and in some cases had approved of putting hoods on prisoners, threatening them with violence, and subjecting them to humiliating treatment. The documents provided to the ACLU also contain acknowledgement that the FBI was aware of allegations of abuse at the Abu Ghraib prison in Iraq before they came to public attention. Ed Lukianoff, an FBI official in Iraq, said in a January 24th email, quote, that the FBI will not enter into an investigation of the alleged abuse because it was not part of the Bureau's mission in Iraq.
A federal judge ordered the Pentagon yesterday to release the identities of hundreds of detainees at Guantanamo Bay to the press. The move would force the government to break its secrecy and reveal the most comprehensive list yet of those who have been imprisoned there. Some of the hundreds of detainees in the war on terror being held at the U.S. military base in Guantanamo Bay, Cuba, have been held as long as 4 years. Only a handful have been officially identified. U.S. District Judge Jed Rakoff in New York ordered the Defense Department to release uncensored transcripts of detainee hearings. The transcripts contain the names of detainees in custody and those who've been held and later released. Previously released documents have had identities and other details blacked out. The judge ordered the government to hand over the documents by March 3rd after the Defense Department said it would not appeal his earlier ruling in the lawsuit filed by the Associated Press. U.S. authorities now hold about 490 prisoners at Guantanamo on suspicions of links to Al-Qaeda or to the Taliban. Most have been held without charges since the detention center opened 4 years ago, prompting complaints from human rights groups and others.
President Bush and Treasury Secretary John Snow are struggling to explain why they didn't know until several days ago about a state-owned Dubai company's takeover of seaport facilities in New York and five other U.S. cities. White House spokesman Scott McClellan acknowledged yesterday that Bush wasn't aware until last weekend that a panel headed by the Treasury had approved the $6.8 billion sale of London-based port operators Peninsular and Oriental Steam Navigation Company to DP World, based in the United Arab Emirates. Snow said yesterday that he learned of the deal in the past 3 or 4 days. Members of Congress, including many Republicans, have complained about the sale, citing a lack of disclosure to lawmakers, as well as national security concerns. Senator Majority Leader Bill Frist, joined by Democrats, has vowed to push for legislation that would block or delay the transfer. This according to Bloomberg.
More on the Dubai Ports World story that's been in the news this week. The United Arab Emirates company has volunteered to postpone its takeover of significant operations at six major U.S. seaports. The move is said to give the White House more time to convince skeptical lawmakers that the deal poses no increased risks from terrorism. The surprise concession late yesterday cools the standoff building between the Congress and President Bush over his administration's previous approval of the deal. In early reaction, lawmakers praised the temporary hold, but some critics pressed anew for an intensive examination of the deal's risks. As part of its new offer, Dubai Ports World said it would agree not to exercise control or influence management over U.S. ports pending further discussions with the administration and Congress. It did not say how long it would wait for these discussions to be finished. The announcement effectively leaves existing American and British executives in charge of the company's seaport operations in New York, New Jersey, Baltimore, New Orleans, Miami, and Philadelphia. Representative Peter King of New York, chairman of the House Homeland Security Committee, described the offer as definitely a positive step. A leading Republican critic of the deal, King, said the president still must disclose details about the administration's review and approval of the agreement last month.
According to the BBC, an application to license the world's first medicine to be produced from a GM animal has been turned down. Atrin is an anti-clotting agent that would have been used by people with an inherited disease leaving them prone to developing blood clots. A company had engineered the goats so they produced the drug in their milk. The European Medicines Agency said the company applying for the license had failed to demonstrate the benefits of the drug outweighed its risks.
Senator Lindsey Graham has suggested to Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez a new target for the administration's domestic operations, according to Consortium News. The administration has plans to go after fifth columnists. Fifth columnists are supposedly disloyal Americans who sympathize and collaborate with the enemy. Graham told Gonzalez during Senate judiciary hearings on February 6th, that the administration has not only the right, but the duty, in my opinion, he said, to pursue fifth column movements. Graham added, I stand by this president's ability inherent to being commander-in-chief to find out about fifth column movements, and I don't think you need a warrant to do that. Graham volunteered to work with the administration to draft guidelines for how best to neutralize this alleged new threat. A smiling Gonzalez responded, Senator, the president already said we'd be happy to listen to your ideas. Recent developments suggest that the Bush administration may already be contemplating what to do with Americans who are deemed insufficiently loyal or who disseminate information that may be considered helpful to the enemy. Top U.S. officials have cited the need to challenge news such as this that undercuts Bush's actions as a key front in defeating the terrorists. Donald Rumsfeld said the terrorists are aided by, quote, news informers, unquote, which idea gave rise to Bush's new programs. In January, the Army Corps of Engineers awarded Halliburton subsidiary Kellogg Brown and Root a $385 million contract to construct detention centers somewhere in the United States to deal with an emergency influx of immigrants into the U.S. or to support the rapid development of new programs.
Philippines President Gloria Arroyo has declared a state of emergency after the army said it had prevented a coup. A top general is being held, suspected of planning to use rallies marking 20 years since the fall of President Ferdinand Marcos to launch a coup. Thousands of protesters took to the streets of Manila today in breach of the emergency order, but were beaten back by riot police using water cannon. Coup rumors have grown ahead of Saturday's 20th anniversary of the popular revolt which ousted Marcos. Arroyo's decision prompted street clashes between riot police and people banned from rallying at a shrine commemorating the 1986 uprising. Police beat protesters with truncheons and used water cannon to disperse the crowd. Coup rumors are common in the Philippines, which has had a dozen attempts to overthrow the government in the past 20 years.
Five Palestinians were killed yesterday and six wounded by Israeli troops in the deadliest clashes in the West Bank since last month's election victory for the Islamist Hamas movement. Palestinian leader Mahmoud Abbas strongly condemned what he called an escalation and called on Israel to end its aggression. The men died amid heavy shooting in the Balata refugee camp after more than 30 Israeli army jeeps and four bulldozers piled into the area adjoining the flashpoint city of Nablus. Three of those killed were members of Al-Aqsa Martyrs Brigade, a radical faction loosely affiliated to Abbas's Fatah party. They had exchanged fire with Israeli troops while holed up in a house. An Israeli security source charged that the three were involved in the shooting deaths of two Israeli settlers in January of 2005 and of an army company commander in May of 2004. The source added that a large amount of weaponry and ammunition was found in their hiding place. Two other Palestinians, one of them a teenager, were killed earlier in what was the second deadly Israeli military operation in the area since Sunday. This from Agence France-Presse.
The Bush administration this week has insisted that the Dubai Port World Deal is no threat to national security. But more details about the ties between the United Arab Emirates and the U.S. enemies abroad are being unearthed as the company's ties to the U.S. war on terror are brought into the spotlight. The Associated Press recently reported that the September 11th Commission report states that U.S. intelligence believes that Osama bin Laden had visited an Afghan desert in 1999 near a hunting camp used by UAE officials. Commission sources claimed that bin Laden regularly went from his adjacent camp to the larger camp where he visited the Emiratis. National Technical Intelligence confirmed the location and description of the larger camp and showed the nearby presence of an official aircraft of the United Arab Emirates. Reacting to this information, White House counterterrorism chief Richard Clark reportedly called the UAE to confront them about the government's reported contact with bin Laden, hoping to monitor the camp to launch a missile strike when bin Laden returned. Less than a week after the call, intelligence officials were irate to discover that the camp had been abandoned and dismantled. But UAE ties to terrorism have received media scrutiny long before the port's contract uproar. The United States continues to maintain a good relationship with the UAE, considered to be a partner in the war on terror.
Iraq canceled leave for the police and army and placed them on highest alert as the death toll mounted yesterday as sectarian violence swept the country. The main Sunni political group pulled out of U.S.-sponsored talks on joining a national unity government after the bombing of the mosque in Samarra. The main Sunni religious authority made an extraordinary public criticism of the Shiites' most revered clerical leader, accusing him of fueling the violence by calling for protests. President Jalal Talabani pressed ahead, despite the Sunni boycott, with a meeting of political leaders that he called to avert a descent towards a devastating civil war. Police and military sources tallied at least 78 deaths, mostly of Sunnis, in the two biggest cities, Baghdad and Basra, in the 24 hours since the Samarra attack. Dozens of Sunni mosques have been attacked and several burned to the ground. This according to Reuters.
Police and soldiers fanned out to enforce an extraordinary daytime curfew in Baghdad today, and three provinces in a bid to halt the wave of sectarian violence that have killed about 120 people since the bombing of one of Shiite Islam's holiest shrines. Security forces blocked major roads and surrounded Baghdad's two main Sunni mosques as streets throughout the city of nearly 7 million were virtually deserted. The nation stood on the brink of civil war, and the American strategy in Iraq faced its gravest test since the 2003 invasion. There is little sign of the curfew in the teeming Shiite slum, Sadr City, where armed militiamen from radical Shiite cleric Muqtada al-Sadr's Mahdi army have been out in force since the Samarra shrine was attacked Wednesday. Iraqi police found six bodies handcuffed and shot near a parking lot in the area. South of the capital, in the religiously mixed area known as the Triangle of Death, gunmen burst into a Shiite home in Latifia, separated men from women, and killed five of the males. Late Thursday, Iraqi state television announced an extension of the nighttime curfew until 4 p.m. today in Baghdad and the nearby flashpoint provinces of Diyala, Babil, and Salahuddin, where the shrine bombing took place.
According to The Guardian, CIA planes have landed in Canada 74 times since the 9/11 terror attacks, underscoring fears that the United States is ferrying suspected terrorists through its neighboring country en route to foreign prisons for torture. The government memos were released this week under Canada's Access to Information Act. Internal government briefing notes revealed senior intelligence officials from six government agencies, including the Security Intelligence Service, met in late November to discuss the flights. One memo, dated November 28th, instructed officials to tell the media that there was no credible information to suggest that these planes were used to ferry suspected terrorists to and from Canada or that illegal activity took place. U.S. intelligence officials have said in the past that the planes are more likely to be carrying staff, supplies, or Director Porter Goss on his way to a foreign visit. Last November, journalists and the opposition in Parliament raised allegations that at least six aircraft linked to alleged front companies for the CIA had landed at Canadian airports in the previous 6 months. One of the secret briefing notes which said that Canada Border Services Agency reported that 20 aircraft had made 74 flights to Canada since the 9/11 terrorist attacks on New York and Washington. This, according to The Guardian.
A Nigerian court has ordered multinational Shell to pay $1.5 billion to the Ijaw people of the Delta region. The Ijaw have been fighting since 2000 for compensation for environmental degradation of the oil-rich region. They took the case to court after Shell refused to make the payment ordered by Nigeria's parliament. Ijaw militants have staged a spate of attacks against Shell facilities recently and are holding seven foreign oil workers hostage. Following the violence, Shell has halved its output from the country. Shell is the largest oil producer in Nigeria. The company says it believes there is no evidence to support the claim and will appeal against the ruling. Shell's lawyers argued in the federal courts in Port Harcourt that the Joint Committee of the National Assembly that made the order in 2000 did not have the power to compel the oil company to make the payment. According to the BBC, a judge ruled that since both sides had agreed to go before the National Assembly, the order was binding on both sides.
London's popular mayor has been suspended from office for 4 weeks for comparing a Jewish journalist to a concentration camp guard. The adjudication panel for England ruled Ken Livingstone had brought his office into disrepute when he acted in an unnecessarily insensitive manner. The ban is due to begin on March 1st, but Livingstone said he may appeal to the High Court. The mayor said this decision strikes at the heart of democracy. He added, "Elected politicians should only be able to be removed by the voters or for breaking the law." The hearing followed a complaint from the Jewish Board of Deputies, which had not called for the mayor to be suspended over the comment he made to the Evening Standard's Oliver Feingold outside a party. The chairman of the panel, David Laverick, said it had decided on a ban because Livingstone had failed to realize the seriousness of his outburst. This from the BBC.
That was the KBOO Morning News for Friday, February 24th, 2006. Portland area weather, today partly sunny, patchy fog in the morning, highs around 45. Tonight, partly cloudy, lows 25 to 30. Saturday, partly sunny, highs in the 50s. Saturday night, mostly cloudy with a slight chance of rain, lows 35 to 40. And Sunday, mostly cloudy with another chance of rain, highs around 50. Thanks for joining us for this morning news. This newscast was edited by Becca Bartleson and Chris Andre. And our engineer right now is Becca. The KBOO AM News and Public Affairs Director is Kathleen Stevenson, and I'm Jim Thompson.
And I'm Chris Andre.
Coming up this morning on KBOO at 7:30, Ani and Melody host Positively Revolting Talk Radio. At 9, hear our strategies, our needs, first in a series of dialogues in the relationship between people of color and our communities, hosted by Eduardo de Landeros Thierry. At 10, it's the KBOO Report with Robinette Jones, and 11, Democracy Now! Stay tuned for the KBOO Evening News at 5 p.m. Think you've got the stamina to help get up to get up this early in the morning? Well, then come down and help out with the morning news. Please contact Kathleen Stevenson at amnews@kbu.org or call 503-231-8032, extension 202. This is KBOO, your community radio station, in Portland on 90.7 FM, K264AA in Corvallis at 100.7, and K220HR, Hood River, at 91.9 FM. Have a good weekend.
This is the KBOO Community Calendar for Friday, February 24th. Today, Thai farmers speak about organic fair trade rice. This will be at the Food for Thought Cafe at PSU, bottom of Smyr. The speech will be from 12:45 to 2 p.m. For more info, call 503-488-5808. Tonight, there will be a benefit concert at Reed College to support Books to Prisoners. This will be a punk concert. Tonight's bands are Hellshock, Lucifuge, Riot Cop, Absolute Rulers, The Raids, and Consumption. This is open to all ages. $3 at the door. No booze, no fighting. Reed College is located at 3203 Southeast Woodstock. The concert will be in the Reed College Student Union Building. Come learn something new from people freely sharing the knowledge with others. The Portland Free School is just getting off the ground, and they have lots of fun classes for you to enjoy. From yoga and self-defense to American Sign Language and the history of Black Panthers. Check the web for class times and locations, and come with a friend. For more info, please visit the web at www.portland.freeschool.org. One can visit environmental and social activists on the east side of the Olympic Peninsula for a weekend of workshop, skill shares, discussions, ground truthing, tree climbing, networking, merrymaking, music, and food. Earth First hosts the Pacific Northwest Winter Rendezvous. This event runs February 24th through February 26th. It's located on the Olympic Peninsula at the Mount Walker Viewpoint Road. For more info, please call 360-867-6784 or email at erc@riseup.net or jennydv@mediaisland.org. Please remember to bring camping gear, friends, and food to share. Critical Mass Corvallis will have a bicycle ride in celebration of bikes, bicyclists, or rides on the road and non-car transportation. They will meet at 4:30 p.m. at the Central Park on Monroe in Corvallis, Oregon. This was the KBOO Community Calendar for Friday, February 24th. I am Latoya Hudson. You're listening to KBOO, Portland, Corvallis, and Hood River.
KBOO Community Radio has an immediate opening for a part-time temporary pledge drive premium assistant to solicit items that will be given away as thank you gifts during our spring membership drive. The position runs from March 2nd until April 14th. Hours will vary, but should average about 12 per week. The deadline to apply is this Friday, February 24th at 5 p.m. For information on how to apply, go to KBOO's website, www.kboo.fm, or drop by the station during business hours and ask for an application.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor the third annual Oregon Queer Youth Conference. The conference is open to lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, transsexual, queer, questioning, and intersex youth and their allies under the age of 23 to get together, discuss the issues, and have a crazy cool time. The conference takes place at the Caitlin Gable School, located at 8825 Southwest Barnes Road, on Saturday, February 25th, from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. For more information, go to www.oqyc.org.
KBOO has an immediate opening available for a 10-hour per week part-time office assistant. The position is available to Portland Community College students who have federal work study award and skills in office administration. To apply for this position, please email your resume with a brief letter of interest to membership@kbu.org. If you would like more information about the position, email or call 503-231-8032, extension 207. The position will remain open until filled.
And this KBU program has been made possible in part by KBU Foundation members and a grant from Oregon Children's Theater presenting the world premiere of The Giver, a story of a boy learning of the tragic sacrifices his community has made for safety and security. The Giver runs March 5th, 11th, and 12th at 2 p.m. at Keller Auditorium, 222 Southwest Clay. Tickets at 503-228-9571 or Ticketmaster.com. Appropriate ages, 10 and up. Information about The Giver at octc.org. And by Oregon Peace Works, presenting the second annual Gala Mardi Gras benefit Saturday, February 25th, 6 p.m. at the Grand Ballroom in downtown Salem, featuring music by Kate Sullivan and company, Voodoo Mountain Zydeco, and Zydeco Dance Lesson by Deborah Seek. Plus, the political satire of Dr. Atomic's Medicine Show with New Orleans-style food included. Auction with unusual items and no-host bar. Tickets at 503-585-2767 or OregonPeaceWorks.org. Coming up next, Positively Revolting.